Hello, Bikescapers. We're off to a mellow start here. Thanks for all the cards and letters and emails and whatnot. I asked for feedback on the sound quality, and I got it. I realize I've been blasting your ears out. So working on it. Working on the sound quality here. So this is Bikescape, the podcast, the audio blog, the show about bikes, people who ride them, where they go, what they do, what they think about. We're riding with open minds, not just open windows, but open minds. So this week, you know, a couple weeks ago, we talked to Chris Carlson about how to make change and how to create community and make change in your community and through bicycling and how that can be. And Chris, and I have to say myself too, we work mainly out on the streets. You know, we're out there in critical mass. We're out there flyering people. We're out there doing that kind of stuff. And Chris, during the interview, mentioned how he really, he can't do it, but he does. He is thankful for the Bike Coalition having the patience to go to those damn meetings. You know, the government hearings and meetings and meeting with community groups and that kind of thing. So tonight we're going to pay tribute to that, and we're going to show you what it's like. I'm going to show you what it's like to go to the Bicycle Advisory Committee, which is a government committee that in the city here of San Francisco that advises the Board of Supervisors. So without further ado, I'm going to break into the tape every now and then, but we're going to go to City Hall now. All right, so I'm here in front of San Francisco City Hall. Beautiful old Beaux-Arts building. I think I talked about it in an earlier podcast when we were going by on Critical Mass. Very impressive building. It was originally going to be the capital of California, which is why it's so beautiful. It's got a dome about the size of the dome in the Washington, D.C. Capitol. So, walking up the steps here. Walk across the rotunda through security here. Hello. Security here. I'm gonna say hi to my audience.
Oh, man. Hello.
Keeping City Hall safe here. I have a cell phone here somewhere. Okay.
Thank you. What is the tape recorder?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It records to an MP3. Under the beautiful dome. People get married under this dome all the time. Up the big steps. We're going up to room 408. So Andy tells me, I talked to Andy Thornley, who you met in the Market Street broadcast. He's gonna be here tonight, and he said that August is kind of a slow month for the Bicycle Advisory Committee, and not to expect too much, but I looked at the agenda. We're going to be talking about the entrance to Golden Gate Park. They want to build a wider entrance to accommodate all the cars that are going to be going in to the concourse. And I'll provide a link so you can become better educated about that if you wish to. Also, Andy's going to give a report from the Bicycle Coalition about colored bike lanes. He wants to talk about coloring the bike lanes to differentiate them from the rest of the roadway. Still a little out of breath from the ride I just had. Cut across a few lanes of traffic there, and it's really windy out there. It looks like it's going to rain. It's not supposed to rain this time of year. What else is on the agenda? The Home Depot on Bayshore Boulevard. There's a lot of controversy about that Home Depot going in. Part of the Walmartization of San Francisco, the suburbanization of San Francisco. It goes on. There's a section of town by the freeway, of course, that's been
designated big box area, where that's what will happen, actually. It's always been kind of like that, but there's a chance to change it now. And Home Depot moves in, you know, that'll basically set a precedent. So I'm against it. A lot of people think it'll provide jobs. It's definitely going to make bicyclists' life hell on Bayshore Boulevard. Not that it's so great right now, but let's call an elevator, go up to room 408. So San Francisco is a county as well as a city, and so that means we don't have a city council. What we have is a board of supervisors. So the county board of supervisors sort of steps in and is sort of the counterweight to the mayor. We have a strong mayor, Mayor Gavin Newsom, and we have 11 supervisors all elected by district. And each supervisor appoints a committee member to the Bicycle Advisory Committee. And you can imagine all the politics that are involved in that, depending on which supervisor, what neighborhood you're talking about. But the Bicycle Advisory Committee, what they do is they advise the Board of Supervisors on all things that have to do with bicycles and traffic. So they're very powerful. They're almost as powerful as the Bicycle Coalition, but it's also much more political. You never really know what's going to happen when you bring something. I've been to the Bicycle Advisory Committee a few times, usually on issues surrounding putting bike lanes on San Jose Avenue on the way to my place. And things that you think would go through really easily don't. So it's always a surprise to see, you know, for me anyway, to see what happens. There's an interesting bicycle exhibit up here. I'm just stopping here. I'm on the mezzanine up here. I guess it's called the mezzanine up under the dome. There's this strange contraption made out of bicycle seats and wheels. It's sort of a big chair. It looks very comfortable, but I'm afraid to sit on it because I think it's art. Litter at its loveliest, it says, Odo Rumpf from Cologne and Leverkusen, Germany. Huh. Okay, I'll be back in a blip when we start the meeting.
Good evening. This is the Thursday, August 18th meeting of the San Francisco Bicycle Advisory Committee. This is a period for public comment. The public may address the committee on any matter within the jurisdiction of the committee. This should not relate to any item specifically on the agenda, since the committee will take public comment with each of the items identified. The committee requests that each person limit himself to 3 minutes. So does anyone have a general public comment? Bill?
Do you need to use the microphone?
Yes, And please introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Bill Manilwalt. I've been in San Francisco for about 40 years, and I just recently started riding a bike again in my work. I'm a visiting nurse, and I haul about 40 pounds of gear around, and I have airless tires because I can't afford to have flats and be late to my appointments. And they're pretty unforgiving. And I have just become increasingly dismayed at the state of the pavement in general, but especially on the streets that are designated as bike streets. Primarily Valencia, which as you know is incredibly busy with bikes. It's just horrible. I have to ride every other day on my bike because my hands can't take it anymore. I'm going to go buy a suspension fork and balloon tires and the whole thing, but it's just crazy to have these kind of, I rode 30 years ago, I used to commute to work on a really high-end tubular saw-ups with 120 pounds, and I never had this problem. Of course, I was 30 years younger. But it's really just horrible. And I don't know if this is the venue to vent this, but I really want to put input into the Department of Public Works to pave the streets for the bikes. That's pretty much it. The other issue relates to that. The wonderful map that's sent out with that shows the hills and shade and everything, it shows Third Street as a bike lane, bike street. And I came down there the other day, and I really thought I was going to die. I mean, not only are there trenches and holes and unfilled-in things, there are cones that take you as a cyclist and move you into the left lane along with guys in pickup trucks trying to get work on time and semi-trailers tractor trailers. I mean, it's just, there needs to be a little flyer that goes out with that map, a little piece of paper that says, until further notice, avoid Third Street. I don't know if you can advise me who else to talk to about doing something about the streets. And I'm sure this is old hat to you, but it's just tearing me up.
Casey, do you want to address that?
Well, I'm hearing now there's a new map that just came out that actually is supposed to have that. You want to show us that at all?
Mr. Guy, I'm just about to hand you a new map. Turn around.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But that just came out, right?
See?
That's like fresh off the press.
That's way cool.
There you go. Problem solved.
Success.
There you go.
Yeah, well, sometimes things work. Yeah, so anybody can do public comment at the Bicycle Advisory Committee. Also at the Board of Supervisors meetings every, Mondays, Tuesdays these days. They have, you know, any of these commissions and committees and at the Board of Supervisors, you can go and speak about pretty much anything you want. Whether or not they'll listen to you, I don't know. But the bike advisory committee is pretty good. They have a lot of regulars, and they're trying to get people to show up and participate. And I think it's a great thing if you can pull that off. One of the things that's happening here in San Francisco is Home Depot is trying to move in on Bayshore Boulevard. Bayshore is this stretch of road that parallels the freeway. So they're expecting people to drive off the freeway and then, causing more traffic there. And Bayshore is just this hellish place to ride a bike. Anyway, I'll just play you a little bit of this. I may cut into it towards the end, but it goes on, doesn't it? But hold on for this.
Yeah, hi, I'm Michael Larson. Hi. And I came here to speak about Home Depot. I'm a bicyclist. And actually, what I have here is the Environmental Impact Report, which was approved by the Planning Commission. And just to give you an idea of the magnitude of this project that's going forward, this is going to come in front of the Board of Supervisors, I understand, on September 13th for a vote. And I think it's really important if we can put a recommendation forward to the Board to vote no and ask for a smaller scale project in summary. But to speak to specifics on what this project presents is that it's going to present large-scale impacts on all the vicinity corridors around the Bayshore, Mission Corridor, Cortland, and Cesar Chavez. Specifically along Bayshore, I know there's bike lanes they're talking along Bayshore. Now, if you look at the plans here, you'll see that there's a four-lane entrance that goes into the parking lot. It's a three-story parking lot with about 700 parking spots. We expect that as bicyclists go down Bayshore, they're going to be confronted with a lot of cars that are going to be idling and waiting to get into this parking lot. Home Depot has acknowledged that the parking lot cannot hold all of the traffic that's going to be coming into the parking lot during peak hours. This is going to be a potentially large conflict for bicyclists along this corridor. Another important route along this corridor is 22nd Street Caltrain Station to Bernal Heights, which I bicycled on for several months, and it's not a great route right now. But they have an entrance on Luma Street, which is planned for this project, where there's going to be truck deliveries that are going to come in. It's going to make that street much more dangerous, and I wouldn't suggest that anybody want to take Bayshore as well if you're a bicyclist. The traffic studies that Home Depot has done forecast on some streets up to an extra 1,000 cars per hour that are going to be traveling on some of these surrounding streets, which obviously have severe impacts to bicyclists in this neighborhood. I'd also like to say that the Environmental Impact Report has a number of flaws in it as well that tend to undercount the impact that we're going to be seeing in the Environmental Impact Report. For one, the morning traffic study was done on the day following a three-day holiday when it's traditionally pretty light, so it was the day following Columbus Day. A lot of the data in the traffic studies is over 10 years old as well, which is not current for the type of project and planning that needs to be done. And then finally, the Home Depot property in and of itself is all that the CIR is concerned about. However, as you all know, once you get a large store like this that comes in, and this is going to be one of the larger Home Depots in the Bay Area or in the country that's going to be going into the site, what you're going to see is you're going to see other large stores that will follow suit. Pier 1 has expressed an interest in a parcel that is just south of the Home Depot site, and we've heard of other vendors or businesses that are interested in moving into this corridor as well. So the traffic study only considers Home Depot in and of itself, so imagine having these other stores come in, and it's just going to magnify the problem that we're facing. So, and finally, one little bit that I'd like to add is that with all this traffic and pollution that we would expect to be generated from people that are waiting to get in or circling to get into this large parking lot that they're going to be building, and the October 21st, 2004 issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, a study came out and looked at the effect of pollution on bicyclists, and that study found that bicyclists that are bicycling in traffic where there is idling traffic and pollution have an increased frequency of 3 times greater chance of suffering a heart attack within 1 hour after their exposure. So there's a lot of things to be concerned about, and if I could, I'd like to leave this document with each one of the members.
Just a question real quick. You said it's the New England Journal of Medicine. Is it a recent issue or is it an older issue?
It's the October 21st, 2004 issue.
Okay.
That's something I didn't know about. So, this... Now I get to spout my rants and opinions, because that's what this podcast is all about, my opinions. And you can agree with them or not. If you don't agree, send me a sound file, and I'll put you on the air. Send me a sound file telling me why you think it would be a good thing to put in a Walmart-type store or Home Depot on Bayshore Boulevard. You know, there are a lot of people that think it provides jobs. I think if you listen to the Kunstler interview from a few weeks back, it gives a different idea. It's something that promotes sprawl. It's something that will promote driving, and it's anti-bicycle and it's anti-pedestrian. People do not walk to a store like that, and there are ways to have wood delivered, big chunks of wood. There are ways to drive to these places too, but you can also have not an 800 car garage, but you can have housing all around where people won't have to drive as much. There are solutions to the problem. We have to be creative, because gas is going to be $6 a gallon soon, and there won't be any more jobs. These things will not produce jobs, and in the end, these are job reducers. So, don't want to be too extreme in my views, but I really think that the Home Depots are just a plague, and all these big box stores are really bad for the environment, for the for social interaction, and for it's bad. It's just bad planning. And speaking of bad planning, one of the things that about government, I don't know who it was that said that you don't want to know how laws and sausages are made. Here's a real sausage of a law that came apart. Golden Gate Park is this beautiful park in San Francisco, kind of like Central Park in New York. And for some reason, there's two museums in the park. There's a tradition for these two museums to be sitting around the music concourse. There's a big amphitheater, museums on either side. And they're both being rebuilt now, and with huge garages being added on. And we bicyclists and pedestrian advocates and some of the businesses around the neighborhood were some Johnny-come-latelys, but a lot of people have been fighting these garages, but it basically is happening. You know, there was an election. The election won by a small amount. And one of the things that the election Proposition J was back in 7 years ago now was that in exchange for a garage, they would take away all the parking spots and close the music concourse in between the two museums to cars, and make it what they called it a pedestrian oasis. And if you looked at the old campaign literature, I don't know if I can dig any of it up now for the website, but I'll try to do that. It shows this beautiful sylvan setting of a park, you know, with no cars, people walking, biking, pushing strollers, and as it turns out, That's not what's happening, and it's a long story. There was a big court case, and you'll hear about it. So Susan King, who's a committee member on the Bicycle Advisory Committee, also a member of the, I believe she's on the Central Committee of the Green Party here in San Francisco, gave a report to the Bicycle Advisory Committee.
Great, thank you. Yeah, this proposition came around by a very, what I consider a very kind of sad process, because I was one of the activists who was very against the underground parking garage from its inception, and a lot of us that have been struggling against the garage, the circulation plans, and everything else, because it is. Frankly, I think it's a bad thing for our park, and it's we've yet to see the results, but we will very shortly. One of the things that happened was last year there were several litigants who brought suit against the MCCP, which is the nonprofit organization that's overseeing the garage development, and sued them and the Concourse Authority for violating part of Proposition J in 1998. Proposition J was the Golden Gate Park Revitalization Act of 1998, which is kind of a euphemism, because really what it was is it authorized the construction of the underground parking garage. And everything else has just been sort of a distraction. They've really been focused on getting that garage and the other improvements that they said they were going to do. Some of them they've done, some of them they haven't. But that's neither here nor there. What happened last year is several litigants sued because one of the things that Prop J did say is that they would not have an entrance or exit inside the park. This was to allay concerns primarily from people who live adjacent to the park, that if you're going to move the cars out of the park, where are they going to go? And the concern was, or if you're going to bring hundreds of cars into the park, that they're going to drive all over the park. So they said, no, there's going to be tunnels. They're going to go underground. You won't see them. The cars will all be underground. The people will be above ground. Everybody will be happy. So the 10th Street entrance on the north is actually a tunnel, because it's a very short street, very short period of a very short length between the street, Fulton Street, and the entrance to the underground garage. So they were able to do one tunnel. And then on the south side, they have done the entrance at MLK Drive at MLK and Concourse Drive, which is a ways into the park. It's, I can't remember exactly how long it is, but it's a significant length, and they were unable to get the financing to build a tunnel from Lincoln Avenue or to figure out a way of doing an underground entrance from the south. So they were proceeding with a garage that was out of compliance with what the voters thought of. Their counter to this lawsuit was to create dedicated lanes on Martin Luther King Drive, which is a two-lane road that starts at Lincoln and 9th in the inner Sunset. What they wanted to do was widen that road and make the two outer lanes dedicated museum access-only lanes, and the inner lanes would be parked through traffic. A coalition started working, organized around this, to fight the creation of a four-lane drive through Golden Gate Park, just because it would really ruin the ambiance. It would be very dangerous for pedestrians and for cyclists to have that four-lane road. What happened is the judge ruled that the four-lane road complied with Proposition J. So now, not only do we have the garage and the supposedly illegal southern entrance that does not comply with what the museum presented, what the garage backers presented to the voters 8 years ago. But now we have the judge saying that you have to do this four-lane road if you're going to have the southern entrance. And so we were kind of over a barrel, and so the advocates of Golden Gate Park and the garage backers actually got together and came up with a ballot measure that says, no, you don't have to widen MLK. MLK stays as it is, with only two lanes of moving automobile traffic. And this benefits the garage backers because they don't really want to do something that's unpopular, although they will. They've proven that. And it's a benefit to park advocates, I believe, because it keeps MLK at two lanes. It also keeps the option open that we can go back after the garage is open and say, okay, now we want a bike lane here and create a completed bike network through the park if we remove 30 parking spaces. But if they turn it into four lanes of moving traffic, there will never be the opportunity for a bike lane. Did I leave anything out? Did I give you too much information?
Does anyone have any questions regarding how many people are familiar with this issue already? And on the committee, is everybody fairly familiar already? Okay. Any other committee members? Any members from the public wish to address this issue? As background.
Sure. Andy Tony, Bike Coalition. Just briefly, I've also been a member of that coalition, the MLK drive issue, as a citizen from its inception last year, and have been following that and care very deeply about not widening MLK. The Bike Coalition, for its part, I should say in all these cases, for the resolutions and the measures that are coming, we have a board approval process, so the board hasn't met to discuss these. I can't tell you what the Bike Coalition's support or opposition to any of these things is going to be. But I'll tell you that on behalf of the staff, we have reservations with this, and my advice to the board will be to take no position on this resolution. Because first, the second entrance to the garage is not only inside the park, it's dead center in the park, and it's actually within the concourse. And it presents what we consider to be a much greater hazard to the original and key intent of Prop J, which is the pedestrian oasis and the diminishment of automobile traffic in the concourse. And this second entrance is very likely to become the primary entrance to the garage, given that the circulation through the concourse has now been allowed to come from both sides for drop-off purposes. And as people enter the concourse to drop off, they're certainly going to find it more convenient to enter the garage at that point than to go back out to Fulton. And likewise, when they exit, they're more likely to exit through that point. So we have basically a big ventilation duct blowing cars out into the concourse and sucking them in to the concourse in exactly the center of the park. And I again point out to this committee that we have to do everything we can to diminish the danger presented by that second entrance, because not only is it introducing cars directly into the concourse, but it's doing so in a very peculiar way in terms of conflict points. People are entering and exiting as traffic crosses that point directly in front of the academy, school children, tour buses, and so forth. We're very sorry at the Bike Coalition that more didn't come out of this resolution for the benefit of bicycles. This is a huge concession to the concourse, who have been basically caught breaking Prop J very blatantly, and the judge's ruling basically says that this is an illegal entrance unless it can be provided with a dedicated access route. So there's a big opportunity here to demand Saturday closure of JFK on top of Sunday closure. To demand implementation immediately of a cross-park bike route, and to demand other improvements for bicycles. If we're going to concede the one key damage and injury to the concourse that we feel that we should have gotten more from this. So we're pretty disappointed with the outcome of this. At the same time, we recognize that there was a very broad coalition of people who came into this, and it's impossible to satisfy that many interests. And I think it is a miracle that so much of the progressive green left did get together. And if, in fact, the Bike Coalition sits this out, that'll still be quite a remarkable thing to have had that many interests come together and agree. But again, we are likely to neither support nor oppose this. I fear personally that MLK, wide or narrow, presents a huge peril to the Inner Sunset. The traffic situation at 9th and Irving and the N Judah is going to be a disaster in either event. And I also fear that a couple of years from now, the voters are going to be approached to widen MLK or to come up with some other mitigation for this thing, because if that entrance is legitimized, it's going to be very difficult to have any kind of leverage in coming up with a better solution for this. So a very heavy heart on my part to not be able to get behind this. And yet, I don't think there's anything we can do at this point because the deal has been struck. So I'll leave you with that.
All right. It's a shit sandwich, and everybody's got to take a bite. So, you know, you win some and you lose some. What can I say? So, in the news, let's see. That's it for the BAC. You know, it was all San Francisco type stuff that was happening at all the issues that we talk about at the BAC. But they're all kind of universal. It's all about taking away space or reclaiming space from the cars, and trying to make a community livable again, and not trying to lose space like in Golden Gate Park, for God's sakes. So if you don't have a BAC or something like it in your town, try and get one. Ours has only been around for about 8 years or so. And it took a long time to get it up on its feet. It's kind of effective now. It's working a little bit better now. And, you know, where you live, if you have something along the lines of the BAC, get out there and get involved with it. And, you know, if there's a street that's too bumpy, or if you have questions about a project, or maybe you'd like to get yourself appointed to the BAC in your town, that's something to think about. It's not for everybody. It's government. It's all about making sausage and laws and shit sandwiches. But sometimes it's rewarding if you're the patient kind of incremental type of person that likes to make incremental change. Anyway, that said, this is the news as I see it. I'm going to keep it short. We're running a little late now. Let's see. This is something happening this Saturday here in San Francisco. It's kind of an alley cat, but it's called the first San Francisco Public Library Bike Race, Saturday, August 27th. It starts at the San Francisco Bike Kitchen at 18th and Alabama over in the Mission. What do they say? They say, check it out, bookish bike worms. This well-read bike race takes the alley cat concept to a circuit of San Francisco Public Library branch libraries. Teams of racers, it's teams, must pedal from branch to branch and check out an item at each of 10 libraries. The Richmond and Sunset branches are obligatory stations, and you have to return to the finish line with a magical mix of borrowed items and receipts. So there's on-site registration, 11:45 to 12:45 p.m. Each rider pays $3, which goes towards a cash prize for the winner. You pre-register via email, and you can pay only $2 on the day of the race. So you want to contact Adrian Lung at sflibrarybikerace@yahoo.com. I think I might do that if I can get away for a few hours on a Saturday. I have a family. I like to hang out with them, but that sounds like fun. Also, this is not happening until September 24th, but I want to get it on your radar. This is a great movie that was made 100 years ago this year. You can get it. I will put a link on the blog. The blog is... What is the blog? It's bikescape.blogspot.com. And I will definitely put a link to the San Francisco Chronicle article about this. There's a movie that was made by a man named Jack Kuttner. He attached a camera to a San Francisco trolley and shot a black and white film as the streetcar rolled from 10th Street on Market Street all the way down to the Ferry Building. This happened 100 years ago, back in 1905. It's an amazing movie because it's running. It's the camera's moving down the main stem, the main street of San Francisco, at about 5 to 8 miles an hour, and life is going by. And it was back in the days when the car was just taking over. There were no rules. The road was just crazy. People in the road. People still thought it was safe. People still thought that belonged in the road, and it's something we're trying to reclaim now, 100 years later. But there really isn't much of a sidewalk because everybody's. Actually, I don't think there were sidewalks. There may be just a little bit of a sidewalk, but people were just in the street with the cars, the horses, the streetcars, the cable cars. It's an amazing thing, and you just get to have this great slice of life. It goes on for about 10 minutes, and you can download this movie from the Library of Congress, and the link for that is over on this San Francisco Chronicle article that you can get online. So I really highly recommend that. And the reason I mention it is because this woman, what is her name? Oh, I don't have it, but I will remind you of it later, and it'll also be on the blog. Emily Chapman, that's her name. She's a 21-year-old USF graduate, and also, well, you know, I may not be getting this exactly accurate, but somebody made this movie, okay? They recreated the movie back in, I'm going to turn this music off, because we're not ready for that one yet. They recreated the movie in 2002, and it took them quite a bit of time to do it, and it's going to be shown at Justin Herman Plaza at the end of Market Street by the tower of the Ferry Building. And that's the spot where Critical Mass always gets started. And at sundown, what's the date? September 24th, so you got plenty of time. They're going to have an outdoor screening. And go down there, bring your bike. I'm sure there'll be bike parking. And check it out. That would just be amazing. So, and I'll meet you there. We can all meet. All us bike scapers in San Francisco can meet at this thing. And I think it'll be a great party. So and you can see, it's just amazing. It's watching the old movie is just amazing because it's such a, for those of us who live here, it's such a familiar street. And yet it's like looking at a different country almost. And the other big news is someone I met through this podcast. His name is Kyle. Hi, Kyle. He sent me an email and he had this great idea of putting the movie Still We Ride on screening that here in San Francisco after the September 30th Critical Mass. So we're going to do that. We seem to have gotten a place to do it. It's going to be at Station 40 at 16th and Mission. And it's going to start at 9 o'clock, so you don't have to rush. You can go get a burrito or some beer or something after Critical Mass and then come on down. It's going to be a donation. We haven't figured out how much it's going to be. The money's going to go to the New York Critical Mass people who have huge legal bills to pay to fight the police and the city who have been suing them and trying to keep them from having Critical Mass. So do come and see that sometime. Keep your eyes open for that. I'll be reminding you about that weekly, and there'll be flyers at Critical Mass. And this movie is also playing, Still We Ride is playing at various film festivals around the country in lots of cities. I can't tell you offhand where they are, but I will put a link to the movie and a preview trailer and information about the film festivals that are traveling, bicycle film festivals that are traveling around the country. So you can see it in your town too. And I guess that's about it for another Bikescape. It's been a pleasure being with you. And next week we'll get out in the streets and do something else. I'm not sure what, but we'll do something and we'll find somebody to do it with. And maybe I'll take you on that library alley cat ride. And well, we're just going to finish this show with my favorite song of all time, Cars by the Desperate Bicycles. This is Pod Safe music. I can play the whole song from beginning to end without having to talk over it. Enjoy.